I think when you look at how healthcare is built, our healthcare ecosystem, really, we are just one small player in the entire,
Yes.
system, right? And then you think, how do I really elevate that? How do we grow, as a, how does the system grow, and how do we grow within that system so it becomes synergistic, right? And I think this is where, when you look at the industry in general, you can see many forces at play. So I think for us to be able to, I would say, move forward the right way and at the right time, is about just making sure, ensuring that doctors, start to learn and think and be at that forefront.
Well, welcome to the podcast for the American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine. Today we have June Law. Anne and I met June at a recent AI in Medicine conference called AI Med 24 in Orlando. And we initially had some conversations with June that were so spectacular around the intersection of artificial intelligence and medicine that we actually invited her to do our first live podcast today for the college. So thanks for being here today, June. Just a quick background on Dr. Lau. She is from Malaysia, and after her residency there, she practiced as an emergency physician from 2015 to 2020 in Kuala Lumpur, and also was part of the National Crisis and Preparative Response during COVID. Also worked for the National Institutes of Health in Malaysia full time, and became, in terms of leadership, through various organizations such as the Malaysia Medical Association, a chairperson for a Women in Medicine Task Force, a deputy secretary for a national branch for government doctors. So that's just some backstory. She's currently here in Chicago with us, and we're going to talk around her passion for artificial intelligence and applications to medicine and patient care. And I'm going to turn it over to the Executive Vice President of the College, Dr. Anne Slessoritis, to initiate the questioning. Go ahead.
Okay, well, welcome. I'm so glad that you're here to
Thank you
join
very
us. We're so
much.
excited. And then I'll just ask you to maybe give us a brief overview of your background.
So, yeah,
And
thank you.
don't be modest.
Oh, I try to be as much as I can. So thank you very much for having me here. It's a great pleasure to have met you at the, I would say, at the AI Med 24 conference. I guess I'd be honest and say you guys were the highlight of my day, actually. So it was amazing.
We feel
So
the same way.
so just a brief background, because you've done such an excellent job. I don't think I can top that. I'm usually terrible at talking about myself. So Jun Lau, from Malaysia. I currently serve as the chairperson and founder of the AI in Healthcare and Digital Health Committee. And we've just started, actually, we just formally started about a week ago, to be exact. And I see a lot of great things ahead. But really, very much predominantly, my background is in emergency medicine. I've served at the largest public hospital in Malaysia. That would be the Emergency Department of Hospital Kuala Lumpur. During my time there, I received two Service of Excellence Awards for my contributions. And having spent several years in practice, I decided that it was time to move on into the research aspect of it, because I think, in a way, our system is built slightly different from, how it is like in the US. So spent 2 years there. During my time, it was very serendipitous, because it was right be I entered the National Institutes of Health right before the COVID, when COVID was first discovered, actually. And I was very fortunate to be able to lead and work on several COVID-related researches, publish a couple. And after that, I was actually called to the Crisis Preparedness and Response Center, which you've accurately captured. Actually spent about, I would say, 3 months working on national healthcare data collection for COVID patients. Work reported directly to the team who sits under the Director General of Health at the time. Again, having always known I wanted a global career in healthcare, I decided the time was almost right for me to transition into something different. And again, I would say a series of great fortune. I had applied to the Thunderbird School of Global Management to pursue a global management degree because, again, I envision being a global leader one day, you know, still very far from that. I was awarded the Share Fellowship. So this is actually the school's most prestigious executive mentorship and scholarship program. So that's how I came into here, and that's why you see Malaysia, and then I'm currently in the US based in Chicago. So during my time there, I did a lot of work with, you know, consulting basically for health tech and med tech companies just to keep that passion going. Mm-hmm. I always like to do that. Unfortunately, cannot sit still. Cannot sit.
I'm sure right? They love you.
Yeah, and I guess at the end of the day, you know, I actually dabbled in entrepreneurship as well, you know, pitched two ideas in demo day. Won a small grant for one, I like to say, all around AI in health. I mean, all involving in, you know, integration of AI in healthcare applications. And then decided maybe I should put a pin in that, you know, to further develop my professional identity. So,
very, very impressive. Very, and we're really happy you're here.
Thank you.
Now, this committee that you started mm-hmm. personally, the AI in Healthcare and Digital Health Committee, what is that part of? What organization is that through?
Right.
And more importantly, Anne and I want to know what motivated you to found the commit, to start the committee, to be the founder. So give us like a deep dive into what this committee
I'm
is.
I'm hearing first before you answer that COVID maybe changed your direction.
I think
in a very positive way, is that?
It did. I think it changed all of our directions in general.
But for you, in a very positive way.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like, you know, I like to say as a ER doctor, when you have too much downtime in, you know, when you do research, for me, that is downtime, right? Mm-hmm. And then your mind starts to innovate, try to think of new things to do, try to find
when you
new
have
challenges,
downtime.
Right? That's,
yes,
I think that's
I
what all healthcare
that.
Professionals do, right? So I think really to answer your question, the AI in Healthcare and Digital Health Committee is part of the Malaysian Medical Association, which is the largest organization dedicated, largest and oldest organization dedicated to medical professionals advancing, you know, issues that are important to them. And I think it's been around since the 1950s in my country. So very oldest and very first. And really, the motive, there were two primary motivations really in starting this committee. The first being, really, I think we are at a time where, you know, I've realized that for too long, doctors have always been, I would say, skirting at the fringes of technology. We're always there, mm-hmm. but our involvement level is not what I like it to be. You know, I want doctors to be at the forefront of innovative technologies. I want us to be championing those kind of, movements. And when I saw it, and I've seen that for a long time, I'm sure you both can appreciate that. And I say, what can I do to start us in the right direction this time? You know, we've seen a lot of gap between, you know, end users and, you know, developers, you know, so much. And we ourselves, doctors, are many times at the end, the receiving end, right? And we don't have a say in what, you know, what gets put in, what gets created. Right. So that's one of the first and, I mean, most important motivation. The second really is just looking at the industry. So again, very serendipitously, I know I'm reusing that word so many times, but in the past year, there's been a lot of investment in Malaysia, specifically in developing AI infrastructure by the Magnificent Seven. So that is, something just for context, it's coined by, I think, the Bank of America. Analyst? I figured that out. But he coined the term Magnificent Seven to describe the large cap seven companies, tech companies. So this is Amazon, Alphabet, you know, Tesla, Nvidia, Microsoft, Meta, right? And I think when you look at this, you know, I would say volume on investments, and that's billions of dollars, right? You realize that this is a signal flare right now. You know, this is a great time for doctors to be involved in those conversations. We are at very much the nascent stages, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and even, you know, as a matter of fact, just yesterday, Malaysia launched their national AI I would say development board. So they're going to be involved in regulation of, you know, AI in healthcare and digital technology. So I think all this just, again, shows how important it is for doctors back home to start engaging in this conversation, start being a part of this movement. So, and that's why.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Malaysia, is AI being used a lot in the hospital settings?
And I would say that not as much as I would like to, I mean, as I would like, and again, very much at the nascent stages. So while I would say that in the public healthcare side, we are still working on introducing, you know, I would say innovative technologies. You know, we obviously still undergoing that digital transformation process in general. A lot of great work back home, right? But in the private healthcare, obviously it's obviously a couple of steps ahead. We know we have robotic technologies involved as well. So it's just I guess maybe just a slight context. We are a two-tier healthcare system. We have the government-run public healthcare system and supported by a very robust private healthcare system. Does that make sense?
Okay. So are you finding that the doctors are coming on board now? Because I'm still finding some fear with using that, fear of being replaced, fear of the new trainees, mm-hmm. that they won't be able to think. Mm-hmm. Are you still seeing that?
I mean, oh, absolutely. I think, you know, we, because these conversations are still new, right? And I still see that, I definitely see that kind of fear, you know, about, you know, the lack of critical thinking, you know, when you mm-hmm. bring AI in, you know, and the fear of being replaced. But I think actually the root of all this is, you know, bring education, really, you know,
trying, yes.
right? Race, right. And I always say this, I like to say it, raising the baseline. So, right,
yeah.
You know, if all of us are scared at the same level, that's not going to change anything.
Right.
That's what I think. So,
right,
don't want to comment too much.
Now, you're very much high level in AI leadership, as we are. What challenges have you faced in this area?
You know, really, I think personally, I would say just very much you know, consolidating all this vast amount of information and trying to figure out where do I go next? Because I think, again, as healthcare professionals, we always want to know everything, like the micro level before we can talk macro, right? You know, we are not used to talking about macro without knowing the micro. So I just think that tenuous balance is where I navigate, and having I like to say I've been in multiple spaces, from, you know, a clinician, dabbled in the entrepreneurship side of it, looked a bit into venture capital as well. So you start to think about things from so many different dimensions. And, you know, even now with the addition of regulations, you know, around AI, you sometimes lose focus as to how you want to track through your process of, you know, diving through this information and consolidating them into making something, you know, actionable, clear, and, you know, even clear messages, so to speak. I think that is really primarily the most, the biggest challenge in healthcare. And just,
mm-hmm. What keeps you so motivated?
I think really, you know, the motivation just comes behind, you know, just wanting to push the healthcare fraternity forward in participating in the next movement of AI, you know? I mean, sometimes, you know, I think when you look at how healthcare is built, our healthcare ecosystem, really, you know, we are just one small player in the entire, yes. you know, system, right? And then you think, how do I really elevate that? How do we grow, you know, how does the system grow, and how do we grow within that system so it becomes synergistic, right? And I think this is where, you know, when you look at the industry in general, you can see many forces at play. So I think for us to be able to, I would say, move forward the right way and at the right time, you know, is about just making sure, ensuring that doctors, you know, start to learn and think and be at that forefront. Does that make sense?
That's a great answer. Mel, I'm going to ask you the same question. What keeps you so motivated?
Well, it's really the passion for lifelong learning, to be honest with you. We have entered an era where the knowledge that we need to have moving forward as physicians that we don't have is how to use artificial intelligence for healthcare. We all have seen the power of what it can do. So we want to educate ourselves so that we can help our patients and, more importantly, you know, make the world a better place and improve patient care worldwide. And these podcasts, we are going to be talking with AI leaders all across the globe. And I'm so delighted that June is our first one for Malaysia. I really am.
Yes.
But in other upcoming episodes, I have leaders like June in Australia, in Norway. So we're really going to do a deep dive in how it gets applied in healthcare all across the world, because I truly believe where you, Anne, and June, and myself are going to be difference makers is when we start to use AI to give access to care to patients that otherwise would not be able to get care because they're in an area or a region where there aren't as many doctors as would be needed. And so any thoughts on, like, access to care in Malaysia? Is this something that AI will be helping with, like, provide care to patients that maybe don't have
the access? Because you're interested in public
health. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I mean, I think that's absolutely true and very poignant words indeed. And that's accessibility is something very true, I think, globally as well, when you talk about access to care. I mean, very simply, like, you know, I think back, you know, when you say this, I think back of the days when I spent in the ER, you know, and you see patients who, and even right before that, when we were training, we do actually rotations in all departments. So I've done all that. And you see patients coming from far away, you know, taking that 3-4 hour bus, right? Just for one consultation for you to tell them that, oh no, you know, some of your results are not back or there's something, and things like that happen. And, you know, and somehow, you know, things slip through the crack. I'm sure we are familiar with that. And it's sad, you know, and I think that with, you know, with AI now, you know, definitely there's great opportunities to, you know, overcome all that. But again, I think this speaks to the other part of, you know, we talked about AI readiness, not infrastructure. So I think that's still developing. I think, and we can say that worldwide, you know, in some more, you know, in some countries where, you know, access to even internet is a problem, then how does AI come in, right? But so, yeah, so I think there's that, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, just a random, I mean, I would say just to digress slightly, you know, on a comment on education, I really love that. And it just reminded me something of, you know, how, you know, I think professionals can really stay motivated is to just dive deep into, like, you know, AI, you know, like for myself, example, just very briefly, I actually 6 months ago, I dive into the world of creating my own GPT using the ChatGPT engine. And
yeah,
it was interesting because I used it for education. Actually, that's what when you said education, that triggered me because I wanted to see how, you know, when we've practiced for so long, those are experience that, you know, you cannot quantify, but how do you, you know, use that in a GPT and sort of train, you know, medical students, you know, trainees to go through that same thought process, like how you take history, how you do a physical examination. How
is it something that they're using now in the medical schools?
No. Okay. This is something I'm dabbling in, and I'm just seeing, you know, how it's going to maybe how I'm going to, you know, integrate it with in larger, you know, I would say system, you know, in the future, not now. This is just some, but I just think that
are you using it now?
Oh yes, I'm still using
exciting.
It
yes.
Because because it's all about the testing, you know, like learning how to prompt. So when you put yourself in the trenches, you are forced to learn.
Yes.
You know? So that's what the education. So I am passionate about education as well. I really love the fact that that's your focus. I think that's
absolutely
amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what we're trying to, our mission is to educate everyone, the people, the older doctors, the younger ones, and bring everyone together, the computer scientists, the medical educators, the medical learners, the interns, residents, students, and even working with some high school students. And they've all been phenomenal. And we're trying to bring everybody together because for the medical part, doctors may be thinking, well, I don't know how to do that. Or what you're doing, you're training a large language model. People don't really know how to do that. And it's maybe they're fearful of the unknown, or yes, I'd like to do this, but I don't know where to begin. Mm-hmm. So if we bring the computer scientists and the doctors together, we can all work on these issues together. Because I think we both need each other. I don't think we can move forward working in an isolated situation where we don't collaborate with the computer scientists. Unless you happen to be blessed to be able to do both yourself. But many doctors can't do that. And you're fearful of what you don't know or what you think you can't do when you may with the right help.
Exactly. Very well put. I would say amazing. I like the way you think about it. It's like just bringing everyone together. And I think this is really the way moving forward, right? No silos, you know?
Right. I mean, we can't hide the information in various places.
Exactly.
If we have a common goal and we need to work together.
Yeah. Now, what excites you the most right now in AI and medicine?
You know, I guess it would be really easy to say that everything excites me because, you know, again, like you've just accurately, you know, summed it up. It's everyone coming together. It's not just a, you know, doctors growing and, you know, without the scientists, the data scientists, without even industry players, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that generally excites me. But I think if I were to pinpoint, I would say precision medicine. I think that's the next frontier. Mm-hmm. And it's what we're looking at in terms of developing, you know, drug development, in terms of analyzing vast amount of data. Because I guess I see it in a very interesting way that, you know, as doctors, when we practice, we develop, those years of practice gives us intuition. Mm-hmm. So I see AI as honing data as sort of intuition as well. When AI hones it to give you a specific output, for example, that may represent maybe a sort of a distilled version of some kind of data intuition, so to speak. So that's how I like to think about it. But, you know, it's just one person's thoughts. Yeah.
Okay. June, I want to follow back on this precision medicine, which I love that you mentioned that. So, for people at your level, Anne and I host a virtual lab group, and we have them within most specialties of medicine. But one that we have for precision medicine that is very robust is in cancer oncology. It's Professor Ryan Wynn, who was my colleague at the University of Illinois College of Medicine. So he is the lead for our AI and oncology program. And Ryan just published a paper this week with one of the students that works in his lab and his team on precision medicine and using artificial intelligence in oncology. So I'll share that with you.
That's amazing.
So the fact that you're interested in this whole notion of precision medicine, maybe you'll want to be part of our precision medicine lab group or one of the other lab groups.
Don't put her on the spot.
No. No worries. Absolutely. I think this is where we learn, right? You dive deep, right?
Right. What skills do you think the healthcare professionals will need for the future?
Right. So interesting question. I mean, well, it's an interesting question. And, you know, I think the answer is this. You need the trifecta of skills, which I describe as AI, the knowledge of AI, the knowledge of business, and your clinical knowledge. I envision a future where all clinical professionals will have these three skills. And probably, you know, some ask why, you know, why business knowledge, right? But I mean, really, in the world of healthcare, you need to understand the business of healthcare as well, as I will always say, you know. Obviously, primarily, we are driven by creating greater outcomes. I mean, good outcomes for our patients, right? And that's the primary purpose. But there are other factors in play as well that we need to consider. And that's why I call this my trifecta, you know?
I like that.
Yeah.
Is that your own idea?
Yeah. Just because I play in that space. So I'm thinking maybe perhaps that's what we all of us need to be. And this is where people like yourself, both you and Melvin, is where you hit that kind of charge because you bring together people from all over, right?
Yes.
And the beauty is you bring people from, you know, different countries, and that's beautiful.
That's exciting.
That's beautiful, and I would say not really thought about much, right? I mean, everybody's so focused locally, but really, the key to unlocking everything, I believe, is global.
What would be your advice to people listening to keep themselves educated in the business part and AI?
Oh, absolutely. I think just I would say just continue reading, continue talking to people. Really, I feel, and personally, this is again very personal, is that I think you really grow by talking to people, like
Yes.
meeting you, Melvin, again. Even talking that, I would say we spend about maybe like what, 10 minutes maximum talking to each other, but again, it sparked new ideas, And I think this is how you grow, not just by, again, reading is great. But really putting yourself on the spot. like how I was, when I went to a conference, I put myself on the spot, learning, talking to people, learning,
Right, right.
seeing new perspectives, and also
Being hungry for the knowledge,
exactly,
yes.
and not being afraid to understand, when I say the business side of it, meaning what is, when we talk about ROI, when we talk about, implementing changes, there's always that other aspect of how, what is the ROI not only to the people we serve, the patients, but what is the ROI to the other side of it, to people that, I mean, that, provide other support for, let's say the kinds of, I would say, applications or,
Right.
initiatives we develop.
Because
So
we all
that's
have a lot of ideas, but if it's not feasible from a business standpoint, it won't.
exactly.
And it's a really great point that you brought up. That I could see that actually lacking in people's education. There's more out there about AI right now at your fingertips versus the business end, I think. I don't know what you think about that. Go ahead.
So I just want to circle back to connecting the my comment about lifelong learning and your comment that as a physician, to really be a leader, we have to have some formalized training in business. And what I want to speak to is you yourself did training through Thunderbird, which is rated one of, I think, number one for global business. So congratulations on doing
Thank
that.
you.
As finding time to do that as a physician is
When
amazing.
in your career did you do that?
I was in mid in the
Okay.
mid part of my career. I know it's quite unconventional, but I would say I was one of those few who took that risk to do a big I would say a big leap, because I did not only leap into something slightly different business, right? Which again, I think as healthcare professionals, sometimes we have a bit of a hands-off approach, but I also leaped across countries, like just to do it. So some people would say, what are you doing on the
I'm
other
sure
side?
they said that to you.
But I think,
Yeah.
as you're pointing out,
And look where it got you now. And you had the foresight to know that you would need that in the future.
I think I would say physician's foresight for all of us. We
Yeah.
look ahead, we plan ahead,
Right. Well, to be a true leader in what we are doing, you really have to have some insight into additional education. So, to your point, my first AI certification wasn't in the medical world. My first one that I took was right here in Evanston at Northwestern, where I did my undergrad at the Kellogg School of Management, which is one of the top business schools in the world, just like where you attended. So
That's
they just happened to have a really good artificial intelligence and medicine certificate program, and I took it there. But I think it really helps us in leadership and as physicians, leaders. So I think that's, I really wanted to speak to your point that that's part of the triad of doing what we
absolutely.
do. And, but you, along those lines, what you can speak to AI and the use of, or how we in medical leadership connect the dots with the stakeholders globally. I really want to hear your vision on that since you have a lot of training in global business and in global medicine. What's your view of global stakeholders and how to connect the dots?
So really, I think in terms of global collaboration, I would say that it's just about searching, I mean, connecting the right organizations, whether it's again government, NGOs, associations, and even local businesses. It's just about finding the right hub, I would like to say, where you can bring all of those people together on a level ground to discuss, their interests and their stakes. And if you think about it in a way that, again, as you've rightly spoke about global, how, global collaboration needs to happen. I would say that, when you come from different places, there are a lot of different culture and societal norms, and that
Yes.
leads into the interaction as well. So when you bring all this, I would say you collect everyone together, people will start to learn from one another. People will start to changed, you know, their approach. People will start to see, hey, maybe getting us from point A to B does not need to be, say, method A. It could be method C or D
Yes.
because the approach is slightly different. So I think it's just about having I think the best way I like to say is having conversations and again, you know, spark a thought, which obviously I'm trying to push forward as an association, as a committee within the association, is to create that global learning hub. And coming from Thunderbird, again, we have this 100 million learners program where we create, I would say we create very thoughtful e-learning pieces that we actually provide to people globally. And having and that I think was
Can
one of
you give an example of that?
so one of, yeah, so very interestingly, they did one of these courses they developed was an entrepreneurship. It's an online e-learning course where people from anywhere as with an internet connection can sign up for and do for absolutely nothing at all because they wanted to raise the bar of education. They wanted to bring education and knowledge to people globally. And I think similarly in the aspect of creating a global hub, even within Malaysia, even I would say maybe global might be a stretch now. I might need to dial back a bit, maybe regional hub even, right?
Okay.
What
That's
might
coming from Malaysia.
yes,
Okay.
that's coming from Malaysia, even Southeast Asia. I mean, we have, I mean, again, I would like to be very frank about the great job done by our neighbors, Singapore, with all the AI advancements, strong, you know, support from the Ministry of Health and in general, strong support. And, you know, I think those kinds of things would really, you know, help in terms of coming together, bringing everything together.
Okay.
Okay.
How do you think we ensure ethical implementation for everyone?
I think the key word for me, please, if you have anything, feel free to, like I said, jump in, but inclusivity. Inclusivity, having everyone, stakeholders, and when I mean stakeholders, it is doctors, industry players, you know, even patients,
Yes.
you know, come together to talk about the challenges, you know, the norms, even in their practice, in their location, wherever they may be. And when, again, leads back, when you have those kind of conversations, you include everyone. Now that would be the key.
Yes,
Yeah, I mean,
and
but
you know, and I
again,
like that you pointed out the patients too, to
oh,
give them a voice, give them a platform to participate in all of this. I think
absolutely.
that piece is missing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
Yes.
I really think so too, because you know, I say this sometimes, you know, as an you know, as we are all innovators, we think a lot, and you know. Because we, you know, you sort of try to explore the frontiers, right, of what is possible, and then you start to think about great things, but you forget that the end users sometimes are the patients, and
Yes, we try
you
to
have a
always
great
think
idea,
of that.
right? But it
Yes.
may not be what they need. It's not their priority. So balancing those kind of priorities. So yeah, that's
Right.
a good
And then,
point.
as we've emphasized, it's not just creating something to create it. You have to think about what problem are you solving? What is the problem?
Absolutely.
What are you solving? Not just to
Absolutely.
create something to say you did something, but
Exactly.
now tell us your hope for the future regarding AI and medicine.
I would like to sum this up very simply: shared prosperity in healthcare. And I think I'll leave it as that because I think the definition of prosperity can be anything and everything. It's for us to shape that. But I like to end with that. Simple.
And any closing
Yeah.
thoughts on your
Very
end?
good thoughts. I want to thank you so much for being here. Your energy is motivating, uplifting, and refreshing. And you know, we love to be involved with people with this kind of energy, and we share some of the same thoughts with bringing everyone together. We have to. We have to. We can't hide our ideas. We have to share, collaborate, but I'll agree with you that the end result is, can we make mankind better? Can we make the patients' lives better, each other's lives better by doing this? So our motto is AI for good.
AI for good.
Yes.
If you like what you heard at today's podcast, two upcoming podcasts that are also global, we have Matilda Dorotic, who's in Norway, and she has recently been at Harvard for over 6 months, and then MIT, and will be implementing artificial intelligence for the nation of Norway. And another one that's global that's coming up soon is Catherine Jones, who's one of the most well-established AI radiologists, who's implementing AI in the country of Australia. So our efforts are definitely global, and we hope that with your help, we can bring the global community together to make healthcare better worldwide. So thanks for coming today. It was really a pleasure.
It was a great pleasure too.
Thank you.